Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily life. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hi everyone, it's Ruth here. It's great to have you with me. It's great to have you listening to A Quiet Life. This is episode 18 of A Quiet Life, so close to 20, can't even believe it, really. And as I record this introduction, it is Tuesday the 19th of February, so I'm recording it a little early and I'll tell you why in a second. Today's guest is Pete. Pete's our pastor, and I was really excited to interview him because we had a couple of questions that I have always wanted to ask. I've always wanted to know the answer to. And so I got to ask them. That's part of the fun of doing this podcast. So you'll get to hear them. I point out which question it is that I really always wanted to know the answer to in the interview. I'm not going to give it away now. Pete and I recorded this interview in December, I think. So we talk about the sermon series, and of course you can hear that if you go to stclementskingston.org. I'll put that in the show notes, and you can listen to the sermons if you want to. They're good teaching. They're worth listening to. And also Pete says that he came back from India. I just interviewed him like the week after he'd just spent a couple of weeks in India. So he was pretty fired up by that, and you'll hear that in the interview as well. So I just wanted to explain that to you in case you get confused. He hasn't been to India this year. We recorded this last year. Right, so a little update on this week in my life. Last weekend we celebrated my mother's 75th birthday, and that was very cool. I'm blessed to have such a wonderful mum, and I wrote a blog post about it, so you can read that if you like, if you go to aquietlifeblog.wordpress.com or go to ruthamos.com.au and you'll find the blog there. And apart from that, I have just been working on volume 1 of A Quiet Life. So I have taken the transcripts from the first 14 interviews that I did, and I'm putting them together in a book, and I'm just writing up new introductions for those. So that will keep me going for another few days, but I'm hoping to have that book out in the next month or so. So that's exciting. And then you can just have a read of the interviews instead of listening to them, if that is what you would prefer to do. Or if you just like to have them as a resource for you. I just think they're really amazing interviews, so I'm putting them out there any way that I can, however I can. And in the week coming up, the reason why I'm recording this early today instead of tomorrow morning is that I'm heading off to Canberra at lunchtime. So I'm going to visit my daughter first and foremost. She is the most important thing, obviously. But the reason we're actually going is that our friend Melanie and her fiancé Pete are getting married on Saturday, and so we're going up to celebrate. And Canberra is an important place for me. So my family moved there for 4 years when I was just starting high school, and I made some really, really good friends. And so I always like to go up and visit and catch up with them as well. It's like my second home. So it was really nice that Jess moved there and I have an excuse to go up regularly. So that's what I'm going to be doing, heading off to Canberra at lunchtime today. And that's why I'm getting the podcast up a little bit early or prepared. I'm hoping I can schedule it. It's all a new thing for me, but apparently you can. So we'll see how it all works, won't we? Anyway, so yeah, I'm not sure how much I'm going to get done in Canberra this week. I might get heaps and heaps done because I'm there by myself. And Jess is working, and I might get, you know, next to nothing done because I just enjoy the sunshine and the heat that I'm going to experience, and we'll just see how it goes. But yeah, that's the week ahead for me, so stay tuned. I'll report back next Wednesday. I'm sure the wedding's going to be beautiful. I have no doubts about that at all. That's just going to be a lovely celebration. Yep, so here we go with the interview with Pete. I hope you really enjoy it, and see, you know, what it takes to be a pastor of a church, what makes you choose that profession, or at least what made Pete choose it. So enjoy the interview.
I'm Ruth Amos, and today I am talking to Pete. Pete is the senior pastor of our church, and he and his wife Lisa and their two teenage boys who are probably
16 and 14,
they're good friends of ours. Obviously really good friends, because I know the boys' ages. All I know about them actually is they're really tall. Well, Stephen is amazing.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So one of my favourite memories of Pete, I thought I'd start with, is when he first started at church, and he was up the front of church and he was talking. I think you were possibly giving announcements, but you may have even been preaching. And Stephen, who's the older child, came running up to the front of the church and sort of grabbed hold of Pete's leg, and Pete just put his hand on his head and kept going.
It was Good Friday.
It was Good Friday.
Yeah, Good Friday. And I remember it really clearly. And he stayed with me for 10, 15 minutes.
Ages.
And it was special for me too.
Everyone who had a family in the church just went, that's great. That's so great. So there's a question in my list of questions that I've always wanted to ask you, Pete.
Sure.
So I'm very excited about it. But anyway, I'm really looking forward to this interview. So, first question, back at the beginning, how did you become a Christian?
Well, for me, there was a moment in time. So, for a lot of people, there's a long journey, and for me, there was a long journey too. When I was a very young kid, I wanted to know how I got to be here. And I asked my parents, I said, what happens when you die? And I tried to imagine not being me. And that was really scary. I didn't like that. But my parents weren't able to respond to those things. And so I guess I just thought about it and so on. But as any normal teenager, I kind of rebelled against most things I knew. And so it was actually when I went to university that I first met with people that read the Bible, and I read the Bible for myself for the first time at university. So it's kind of a, it's one of those weird things where kind of the Bible or Christian faith is part in the kind of ether, in the air you breathe to some degree when I was growing up. But I'd never, ever actually, in my memory at least, ever actually read the Bible for myself.
Where in the Bible did you start?
So pretty much that first year of uni was Mark's Gospel. So for me, I just read through Mark's Gospel and with some friends, and we worked our way through it. And for me, I just found the person of Jesus compelling. So I didn't know at the end of that what his death on the cross meant. I couldn't tell you the meaning of the resurrection. I didn't actually know he was going to come back. So my theology was pretty, you know, according to the standards today, I think, well, I was probably pretty light on, but I knew Jesus was the person I had to follow for the rest of my life. And that's where it all began.
And was that, when you say group of friends, was that because of a Christian group or a Christian
Yeah, there was
marriage?
A Christian group on campus, and my sister was friends with some of them. And so, there was... Truth be told, there's some pretty girls there, and they may have had some influence on the situation. But God uses all those things, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And but I was a joker, so I made jokes in the when doing the study, but I was listening. Mm. So I did want to know. And there's one guy in particular who, after every time we met, would take and have a coffee together, and he'd just share stuff in his life. I thought, wow, I've got to think a bit more about that. So he was pretty open with his life and was open about what God was doing in his life and teaching him. And that both freaked me out and also really interested me, intrigued me, and I wanted to know more.
Fantastic. So did you have an altar call sort of?
So I just found myself, I came from not believing, not following, to following almost overnight. And I can't put it down to an exact date, but I just suddenly, everything just clicked. And so I started reading the Bible. I read the Bible like 10 chapters a day. And I wanted to know all these questions. So I want to know, who are the 12 disciples? Like, what are their names? How come their names are different in different Gospels? What did they do? I mean, I don't think anyone in the history of humanity has ever need to know the answers to those questions. But for me... I did. There was really weird questions. I just I just wanted to know, because I wanted to make sure that what I was believing was actually based in fact and truth and history and all those things.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
So you were doing a maths degree then?
Yeah, so I did a science degree and I went to university to do computer science and I thought computer science was it. Went and did first year, hated computer science. Oh, no. Like just, yeah. So I guess I just fell back on maths because I enjoyed maths going through school. So I did physics, maths, a bit of computer science, and I dropped computer science as soon as I could. Ended up doing honours in applied maths, meteorology and astrophysics. So it was just sort of thing I enjoyed. Anyone out there who thinks maths is boring, it basically is until third year uni. So you may have a long way to go, but by that time it actually gets interesting.
Yeah, depending on who you are, because I mean, my husband did maths until third year uni and then went, nah, done.
Right.
But then he's into computer science, so different brain, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
So how have you come from a science degree with a maths major in physics to being a pastor?
For me,
that's the question, by the way. That's the one I've always wanted to know.
Yeah,
how
sure.
Did you come from science to pastor?
Yeah. For me, I think I will always see myself, whether that's legit or not, I'll always see myself as a scientist or a science background. So it's not so much I know this about the world or I know that factor or that formula or whatever, but I think it's a way of thinking. So that's the best thing that I think I've learned, that you don't just accept things. You've got to think through, you've got to observe things, you've got to experiment, you've got to, that sort of scientific method, I suppose, test and approve and make sure. So I think I carry it through just in my life in general. And I actually think that's really helpful for Christian faith. Like, it's fair enough, once you become a Christian and you believe these things about God, it's fine to believe those things. But when things can really go wrong in your life, when the wheels fall off in your life or someone else, then yes, you need some deeper answers than simply, well, I believe it. Mm-hmm. You actually need to know why you believe it. And for me, I needed to know for sure various things. I need to have some way of reconciling my Christian faith with my understanding about how the world works. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not a biologist. I'm not a chemist. So some of the more biological questions I've only thought about more recently. But in terms of cosmology and the beginning of the universe and those things, they were things I had to deal with in the first instance to be able to be a credible Christian. So there was a lecturer at uni who was in the physics department, a Christian, and he did a lecture called God and Space-Time.
Mm.
And for me, that was a really, it's a really cool lunchtime lecture to hear and to start thinking through how those two things are connected. So I guess I hope that in my pastoring that for people who come in who've got kind of apologetic type questions about is the Bible true? Can you trust it? Can we be sure the New Testament documents are similar, if not the same as what we have now? Mm-hmm. Any transmission errors, all those sort of things, as well as obviously the big things of evolution and Big Bang, all those sorts of issues that come up. Miracles.
Mm.
Does God answer prayer? How does that work? I want to be able to have some sort of response to those things.
And we'd all love those answers right now, but this is not a long enough podcast.
Yeah, no worries.
So I'm afraid we might, maybe you can...
Sure. I'll just say this one thing, that I think when Christians come from a scientific background, it's easy for them to become a little too dogmatic about things. And so I guess in the church that we're part of, there's people with quite a range of different views. Mm. And I'm actually okay with that. So there's only one truth of how God did his thing and how it works. But there's actually... there's a range of views which still honour God. Only one's right, but I'm happy in that diversity. So I try not to be really dogmatic on those sorts of things because over time I've adjusted some of my views, and I hope there's room for people with that sort of diversity of views there.
Yeah. and I'm thinking of, we're doing a sermon series on one John at the moment. The way that you're talking makes me think, oh, John must have been a scientist as well.
Yeah.
Because that's how we attack it too.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does.
What we've seen with our eyes, touch with our hands. And So in terms of time, scale and things, you finished off your undergrad degree. Did you go straight into theology?
Or? So I had 3 years where I did a range of different things. So I guess I was fortunate because my dad was a lecturer, and so in maths, a professor in maths, which meant I had a easy entrance in to do stuff. So I did some stuff I probably others might have struggled to do just because I knew people and so on. I'd worked there before. So I did a range of stuff, including some engineering tutes. So I went straight back into academia doing that. I did some bridging courses over summer for the majority of them were middle-aged ladies who needed some maths to get into a uni course.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love doing that. I wrote a couple of stats computer packages just to help nurses in particular of analysis of variance. I did some computer modelling in the Tamar Valley. I just failed that miserably. I did a range of tutoring, light lecturing, I suppose. And I did that for about 3 years. Really loved that. But I was involved in a Christian group doing some helping out a Christian group at the same time as well. So it was a very, very busy time in my life, like a hugely busy time. And I just got married and, so it was fairly crazy.
And then because of your involvement in the Christian group, you decided to...
Yeah, so after 3 years, I pretty much decided I didn't know anything else. So I taught everything I knew and I thought I probably better know something else. So, I went to college just because I really wanted to grow and learn, and I'd given God 4 years in a science degree, so I thought, well, I'm still young, I may as well just do some study. And I didn't really have any real sense of what I would do at the end, other than I wouldn't get ordained. That was the only thing I was sure about. it was just an opportunity to learn more and so on. And, just part of the college community was really great. I didn't do any sort of formal ministry with the youth or anything for 1 year, so I just sort of cut all my ties in terms of responsibilities. Which was probably really, really good because I'd done a science degree and now I had to write essays and I had very few ideas about how on earth you write an essay. Yes. So, that was a learning time for me. And then second year, third year and so on, I took on other responsibilities in terms of youth and young adults and so on, which was great.
So why did you take the plunge and become ordained?
Yeah, it's a million-dollar question. I think... For me, there's always a reality check when you get near the end of a degree. And so there's this dawning reality. I'm loving what I'm learning and I want to be able to be useful for God. What does that look like? And I guess I've never said, God, I'm not willing to do this. So I've never said, I don't want to be overseas missionary. I've always been happy to do whatever he calls me to do, within reasons. But as I researched the various things, it seemed to me that that being involved in a local church was primary in God's economy and that parachurch was secondary. Now, don't want anyone to get me wrong here. It doesn't mean that parachurch is less important. I'm not saying that at all. But I think that it's only when local churches are strong that parachurch ministries are able to exist and thrive. Mm-hmm. And what I was observing more and more was that all the best people were going to parachurch. Mm-hmm. All the dynamic, young, creative, flexible, they were all going parachurch and the church was left with old fuddy-duddies who didn't know what they were doing. And, I was challenged, really challenged by that. Because I wanted both to thrive, and so I thought maybe I should be thinking about that. So then I kind of went through the various denominations and to try to see what I wanted to do. I guess my theology was more on the charismatic end, and so I looked at various charismatic Pentecostal churches. But I found that there was at least one thing on the doctrinal basis that I was not able to agree to, and even if they didn't actually believe it, it was on their doctrinal basis. And so I found myself more and more going down the Anglican path. Mm. And I became an Anglican the week before my ordination.
I love that. I've told people that.
Thanks,
before.
Bish. Yeah.
Well, he wasn't even an Anglican until the week before he was ordained. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. So, yeah, well, I have to say, I'm very grateful you become an Anglican and pastor our church. What does Christianity look like in your daily life now?
Look, it's a great question. I think for me, being a Christian is about that daily walk. So it means that whatever I do, and this is whether I was pastoring or doing anything, that it's got to be about Jesus. So at the end of Colossians 3:17, it says, whatever you do, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And I reckon for me that's kind of like a summary of what I'm trying to do, you know. It doesn't really matter if I'm on holidays or pastoring, whatever it is, that's what I'm trying to do. Yeah, life's about Jesus and about honouring Jesus and serving Jesus. So I guess looking for opportunities to serve him with whatever you're doing. And I mean, I think ultimately if I do that well and every member of our church does that well, that changes the world.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I've never been particularly flash on programs or methods or 1, 2, 3 steps, because it just seems a little artificial for me. It's just that daily walk with Jesus and trying to encourage people to do that. I think some people need to kick up the backside. I do. But most people need encouragement, I think. So, yeah, just try to be an encourager to people to get in mode, work out what's stopping them from progressing and moving them forward.
How important, this is not a question I had in my list, but I often ask people, are you a get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and spend an hour, you know, reading the word and meditating and praying? And, you know, I haven't had many positive responses.
Yeah, right. Well, I could say 2:30, but I would be lying. Look, I do like praying with others. So I find that I love praying just with the Lord, but it is good to pray with others. So traditionally, once our 5 a.m. prayer meeting started, I used to go twice a week. More recently, it's been once a week. But I do love going along because I get the time just to pray myself and then pray with others. And it's just an encouragement.
So that's true. Every weekday morning is it?
Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Right.
5 a.m. 5 a.m.
we have prayer here at the church. Mm. You can tell how often I've been to that.
Well, I do find that it changes my day. It really does. And it's a discipline because you can't just say, okay, it's coffee time. Because there's other people and they're praying and you've got to engage. So I do find that really helpful. I probably prefer walking. So I don't really like just sitting on a couch praying because I find that's more difficult. I can read the Bible, but when I'm praying, I do like to walk, or I find my mind just sort of, works a whole lot better when I'm active and stuff like that as well.
Cool. Mm. So when do you feel closest to God?
I think probably 2 times, 2 sorts of times. One is when I've just had a really, really massive time of prayer, and prayer, fasting, whatever. And I always think to myself, well, why didn't you do that yesterday? You know, like, it's just stupid. When Francis Chan was asked, why don't you fast more? He says, because I love sushi. So, in other words, there's no good reason. There's zero good reason. So, yeah, I had the privilege of praying with a couple of people a few weeks ago for quite a number of hours together. And it just was such a brilliant time. It was full on, but it was so good. And I think that close connection with God, that's where it's up to. Secondly, I think when I feel really close to God is just when I see him at work in other people and I just go, God, you got your footprints all over, your fingerprints all over that.
Mm.
And
depending God, on whether he's touching someone for healing or booting them up the backside.
Yeah, either way. But, like, God's timing is, yeah. I mean, not all of the miracles in the Bible are miracles of timing, but as I've gone on, I've realised that an awful lot are.
Right.
And it doesn't make it any less miraculous, but God's timing is always perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's taken me a long time to realise that it's my time that's wrong, not his. But yeah, we're working on that one.
And it is very, I think, as you go through life with your eyes open, you just see him at work and realise that he's got his hand on everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When I was with the group in India 2 weeks ago, we met this young woman who was not sure about whether she was to do some further training or not, because there was some conflict. Her father had said no, and she wanted to honour him. And so she entered into a 40-day fast.
Wow.
That's hard for me to grasp, you know? And yeah, I know there's people at this church that have done that.
Mm.
So, yeah, I get great inspiration when I hear testimony stories like that, and I think, well, that's, yes, more of that.
Mm. What's one thing about God or Christianity that you wish everyone knew?
Look, at the risk of repeating what others may have said in this podcast before, it has to be grace. So that I just wish that people realise that Christianity was not about this set of rules that you had to obey to get the tick from God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how most of us think. It's just part of our nature. I was coming home in a plane a couple of weeks ago, and there was a young guy next to me, and an Aussie, and an Italian girl from Milan. She had good fashion sense, as you might imagine. And we got talking. They asked me about myself. I talked about what I did, and they asked me how to become a Christian and so on. It was just a great conversation.
Yeah.
And I just tried to communicate to them this grace, because I'm not sure that growing up in Italy or even growing up here in Australia that people really get that. It's so alien. We always work for everything, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want money, you gotta work. You gotta write a book. you gotta do something, don't you?
Nothing comes free.
And I just wish that people realise that God just loves us so much that he wants us to know him, and so he gives us this free gift, because we can't earn it, we can't buy it, but he just so wants us to receive it. We've got to receive it.
Mm. That's fantastic. Yeah. Thank you very much for talking.
Welcome. Thank you.
Wasn't that great to get that challenge from Pete about prayer and fasting? It's always good to be challenged like that, isn't it? Next week, we have Gerald on the show. Gerald's going to talk to us about his travels with his family and about being attacked by pirates. So you'll have to wait until next week to hear about that one, but it's a great interview. I want to thank Catherine Joy for the music for this podcast, and I want to remind you that if you want to support this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/quietlife and support me there for as little as $1 a month. If you want to contact me about anything, you can email me at ruth@ruthamos.com.au or find me on Facebook at Ruth Amos Author or Twitter @A Quiet Life. See you next week.